For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Lord, we do recognize you as the God of love, and we would have no idea what to do in this area if you hadn't taught us the way of true sacrificial love in Christ. So we thank you for that, and we pray, God, that we can now come to grips with the practical dimensions of this and really see it being practiced in our own lives and lives of our friends and stuff. We don't want to just be theoreticians or people that talk about this, God, but people who really practice it. So we pray for your help on that tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay. Last time we had a definition of love in the biblical sense, which is different than the way modern people conceive of love. A commitment to give of myself in every area for the good of another. So in the first place we saw it was a commitment, that it's not just a feeling that you get towards somebody, but it's a decision that you make to give love to someone. We saw that it's giving out, that's the sacrificial aspect of love, which is the stress that Jesus put on it, that unlike the selfish kind of love that just wants to take good feelings from another person, this is a love that is really determined to give out my life to another, to give out in every area. So that part is there because some of us might be willing to give in some respects, but in other respects not. And so we wind up with a deficient type of love as a result. And also that it's for the good of another. And that means that we're trying to basically enhance the life of the person that we love. And that I think should be put over against the concept of giving a person what they need, what's good for them, as opposed to maybe what they want. And sometimes those are not the same things. So that it's possible under this definition to, you know, realize I need to confront my friend because he's going wrong, and that's not what he wants me to do, but that's what he needs to have happen. So it's doing the best thing that I can for another person. Think of the cross of Christ. There is your ultimate picture of Christian love. This is the most loving act that the universe has known. And it fits this definition perfectly. You know, when Christ decided to go to the cross, it wasn't because he felt like it. It wasn't because going to the cross just gave him a real rush or anything like that. You can see that he dreaded this idea. He deplored. He sweat like drops of blood thinking about, you know, is there any other way that I can go on this? But he had a commitment. He said, this is why I've come to this hour. And so he went ahead and did what he did. It was a giving out of himself, a literal sacrifice of himself to the max. And it was for our good. That's the reason that he went to the cross. It wasn't because of him, anything to do with him at all. It was altogether for our sake that he went there, because that's what gave us forgiveness. That's what gets us open, that opens the door for us to get in with God. So I think that working definition works pretty well. Now, tonight we want to think in practical terms, okay? We're out of the theory and into the practice of love. We want to first talk about several qualities that biblical love has, and then we want to think of several areas that we can invest in other people, and finally different levels of relationships, because not all relationships are the same. Okay, these dimensions, I introduced this last week. We saw that love is sacrificial. As John 15 says, Jesus says, greater love has no man than to lay down his life for his friends. That it is righteous, which means that it's willing to discipline. It's not just an anything goes type relationship, but it's a relationship where I may care about you too much to just look the other way when I see destructive things in your life. It's a forgiving love, supremely, and this is a crucial part. A part that is often missing. It's like people will be willing to give in all these other areas, but they just can't forgive wrongs that have been done to them. And so their love ends up being sub-biblical in that sense. And it wrecks one relationship after another. So you see people that are bitter, angry, and who have people that they used to be their friends, they hate them now, and that's the result of a deficient type of love. And finally, that it has to include the emotional. And this part is in there because of the fact that a lot of our deepest needs are really in the emotional area. To meet another person's needs includes their emotional needs. And some of us are deficient in that area. We'll do the other things, but we feel awkward coming through with emotional giving. And then we put a fifth concept in the center, which is initiating. And we saw last week, we were reading 1 John 4, where he says, "In this is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and gave himself up for us." God didn't wait around until we reached out to him and then he responded to it. Rather, he was the initiator. He was the first one to put forward and to start giving. And so when Jesus says, "I want you to learn to love one another as I have loved you," that includes this initiating part. Initiating love is the vulnerable part. That's the part that is scary. Most of us would be willing to do something that's loving if the other person does it first. You know, responding, that's pretty easy. But taking the first step out, bridging the distance between people and initiating relationship is the scarier part, and yet this is exactly what we're called to. Okay, so in addition then, we want to think of different areas of investment, of love giving, and three of these I think are significant. In the first place, what we call common experience. This is about how, you know, if you hardly know somebody, if you never spend time with somebody, you can't consider that a very close friendship. I think you can practice love even with strangers. Yeah, you can do that. But what we're studying here tonight are deep love relationships, how to build quality, deep love relationships. And to do that, we have to basically expend time hanging out with, doing things with the person that we want to love. Secondly, we can talk about our personal inner working. In other words, inside of each person is a complex personality made up of desires, goals, hurts from the past, fears, and these form a complex web that is different for each and every person. And to understand, you know, what is it that makes my friend tick? What are the motivational things that go on like inside of his head and stuff? What really matters to him? And so, those kind of questions has to do with understanding the personal inner working of another person. And so this is a skill that has to be developed. And then, of course, emotional sharing has to do with being able to express love in emotional terms to meet those emotional needs. So I'm going to use these kind of imaginary categories and kind of set it up like this. So there's three columns. And we'll think about a casual friendship, a close friendship, and an intimate friendship. I'm mainly speaking here in terms of generic relationships that you would have with like same-sex relationships and so forth. On the other hand, this would also apply to a marriage. You know, if we get married, we hope, I think, most of us, to be able to have the deepest kind of relationship, the intimate type relationship with our spouse, right? So the same skills, the same capabilities that enable me to have a love relationship with my roommate in a non-sexual setting are the skills that I will need in a marriage to have a successful intimate relationship there. There's no difference. In fact, this is the number one predictor of success in marriage. If you want to know who should I marry, what kind of person should I marry, find someone who already demonstrates that they have these skills, that they are able to love at a deep level, and you can almost guarantee that that person will also be successful in marriage. These are learned skills. None of this comes naturally. There are no people on earth who are just naturally loving people in the biblical sense. They may be loving in certain dimensions, but there's always learning that has to go in here. And we're talking about a learning curve that may extend over a period of years to really get to the point where we're, you know, have become a super loving person. And that's the main thing that Jesus wants us to be. Not that we're all this rigid, holy, do-gooder, you know, rule follower. That's not the image that he put forward. We already studied a couple weeks back that right at the center he says, the thing that really matters to me is that you love one another as I have loved you. He says that is the summary of all of what God's asking for in the Bible. So wherever we're at, some of us have huge problems with relationships. We don't really have any good relationships. Some of us are further down the line. Doesn't matter where we're at. We can always progress further. And as we think through these practical ideas for ways to either initiate and start new relationships or to deepen and make existing relationships more high quality, I'm sure we'll find plenty of things that we can work on here. When we think of a casual relationship, a casual friendship, this is the first step. And I know if you're like me, I know when I became a college student, I was so rudimentary on this. Like, I had a couple of friends, but I don't know how the friendship got started or anything. It was probably them that started it, because I didn't know how to start a friendship. You know, I mean, like, I would meet people and stuff. I was real shy, real kind of tied up in myself. Self-absorbed, insecure. Very hard for me to form new friendships with people. I just didn't know what to do. Of course, you meet certain people and you just seem to click, you know, where it just starts happening. And so if that happened, then I was okay. But anyway, I had no idea for how to, you know, just like meet somebody and just decide I'm going to befriend this person. Well, here's how you do it. First of all, you got to have some common experience. At this casual level, the common experience you have is probably going to be pretty sporadic. It's not like you're hanging out all the time. But, you know, now and then you hang out with a person and do something together. And most of the times that you are with a friend that's casual, it tends to be relatively short-term and relatively superficial. You know, you goof around, talk about things, just kind of have fun. You know, you're not having real deep talks or anything like that very often with a casual friendship. But you do have to take the initiative to put out some time and actually spend time together with somebody in order to get anywhere in this. And so that means I have to come out of my comfort zone and what I'm used to doing. If I want to befriend a new person, I've got to try to come out of my world and try to get engaged with them in their world. So what are you doing this weekend? You know, I'm going out with some friends doing this thing. Mind if I come along? And I take the initiative to ask, can we get some common experience going? Can we spend time together? So I'm initiating time spent with another person. And of course, you know, if the person's like, no, not really, then my vulnerability has cost me at that point. I look like a fool. But that's the price I'm willing to pay. Basically, if we're not willing to take the risk of rejection, we're not going to have friendships. When we think of personal inner working, you know, when you're getting to know a person, you're engaging in general searching into the other person's interests, their goals in life, things they're pursuing, what they like, what they don't like, problems that may be coming up in their lives, things that are worrying them, that they're struggling with. Background, you find out about their history, their family, where they came from, school, this, that, and the other thing. In the Christian context, we're also interested in their spiritual experiences. If these are two Christians relating to each other, how did you meet the Lord? What were you going through before that? What was persuasive you? Or what's happened to you since then? What kind of groups have you been in? What have you learned? And we're exploring into what are your priorities in life? What matters to you? So in all of these, the key for me is that I have to get outside of myself and start to exploring, start taking an interest in another person. And a lot of us lose it right here. You know, I mean, I know a lot of people, I watch people on this, and there are people I know that I've known for the past year, and I watch them converse and carry on with people all the time, sit around in social situations, and I have never heard them ever ask another person something about them. You know what I mean? We'll sit in these bull sessions, you know, with our friends or whatever, and we'll just listen and occasionally make a crack or an observation or quote a few lines from Simpsons. You know, the types of things that people do, and they're sitting around just having a bull session. But there is never any effort to, like, you know, so dude, tell me about yourself, you know, and to try to start taking an interest in another person. Now, okay, there's nothing wrong with that, unless you want to pursue a relationship with someone. Then you have to get a little past that and start doing something that doesn't necessarily come natural to a lot of us. We'd rather talk about ourselves. We'd rather tell a story about the time I got busted for this and that, or the, you know, those kind of things. But when do we ever say, so I don't really understand you, you know, and not in those words, but that's essentially what you're saying, you know, tell me about yourself. And we start, you know, well, what about this? Well, what about that? And we usually starting in more superficial areas, but moving into areas about, you know, their relational life, their spiritual life, their real views. You know, I mean, some of this could be quite superficial, like what kind of music you like, you know, what, and stuff. And we'll talk about stuff like that. Over a series of conversations along these lines, you start getting a feeling for people. Now, here's the other cool part about it, is that if you've ever had someone take an interest in you like this, it's actually pretty pleasurable. People like to talk and explain themselves. They like to talk about themselves. And a person who seems interested in me seems like a nice person. You know, it seems like that's an easy person to talk to. And particularly when, you know, we discover some things about a person and we think about that then later and we start to realize, you know, I wonder why they feel that way. And so the next time we see the person, we follow up on what we learned before with the natural, you know, so you were telling me this about yourself. Explain that more because I don't see why this happened. And people can see the obvious, which is this person is thinking about me. This person seems like they care about me. And so it's just a natural part of relationship building. When we think of emotional sharing at the casual level, you know, showing interest, warmth, enthusiasm. You know, you ever talk to somebody that just seems like they are really into talking, you know, really into relating to you, versus somebody who's, you know, you're like, so, whatever happened, you know, did that other thing ever happen? They're like, yeah. And they're just real deadpan, short answers. There's no... And that's interpreted as, oh, so you don't want to talk to me right now, right? That's exactly how it feels. And a lot of us, frankly, come off this way more than we think. I was just talking to a brother recently who had a friend come up to him and say, you know, I get the feeling that you and I aren't very close. We don't seem like we talk very well. He had no idea the other guy felt this way, but it was because he just gives short answers, not too much feeling. Put a little feeling into it. When we're interested in another person, when we want to, you know, instead of being all hung up and inhibited because we're too wrapped up in self, we've got to learn to be more expressive and more vulnerable. One of the reasons that we give these, you know, short, curt answers and don't really show much emotion when we're relating to people is because we're being cool. And we need to stop playing it safe in relational situations by just trying to be cool and a hard ass. And, you know, take the chance of actually showing that, you know, I'm open to relationship here. I like you. I enjoy talking with you. And project warmth. I don't know if you can think of people. I can certainly think of certain people who do just project warmth. That's the best way to describe it. And you just automatically like people like that, you know? They just seem like cool people. And a lot of us are way too uptight, way too, you know, tied up within ourselves. That's certainly the way I was as a student. I was so uptight, particularly around strangers. I was teaching a Bible study of high schoolers. And there was a bunch of kids coming to this thing, you know, probably 50, 80 kids were coming to this. And so I didn't have any trouble teaching for some reason. I was able to do that. But then afterwards, you know, you'd mill around and talk to people. And so it was kind of an unstructured situation where it's not clear, you know, you got to improvise, you got to actually respond to what's going on. And it made me nervous as hell. I would get in there and I would just be like, you know, get this super awkward feeling. And I felt like I was suffocating. I'd feel like I had to get out of here. And I would. And then people would be there looking around saying, well, where did that dentist guy go? I took off. I fled. And so, you know, people were like, what, he thinks he's too good to hang around and talk with us or whatever? I mean, people were kind of taking offense. And my roommate came and busted me out on it. He says, dude, do you realize how that affects people when you just duck out like that? And I was like, no. And I tell you, I was so clueless. And he was like, man, you know, that just seems like you just don't like them, that you just don't want to be with them. And I was like, dude, it makes me nervous. I don't know how to act and stuff. And so this guy, who was super sociable, I mean, he could really get in with anybody, he was like, next week, he says afterwards, just, I want you to stand next to me and watch. Which sounded kind of weird at the time, but I thought, okay, I'll try that. Can't hurt. And that's how I started. You know, one of the things I started to notice was how he would just sparkle and would put out these feelings to people, and people were just would kind of almost line up to talk to him because it just seemed he was a fun dude, you know. And I realized that I was just a real cold stone face compared to him. I didn't know how to do that, so you know, I basically learned through imitation, and was very, you know, remarkably. This is not something that has to take 10 years to learn. I was amazed as soon as I started to try to smile and try to project a little warmth and stuff. I was having these awesome conversations with people, and it was going, you know, really within a couple of weeks. The progress was amazing, and I was super encouraged. Another thing we would expect, even at the casual level, would be that we have a certain level of sensitivity, which includes the idea of awareness of what's appropriate in conversation. You know, think of the person who's so talkative that they just talk constantly and they take up all the verbal space in a conversation, and it's a drag. You know, it's like, dude, will you please shut up once in a while and let somebody else have something to say? They're lacking in sensitivity. Well, some of us are talkative by nature, you know, that's the way we are. But then, as we try to develop skills in loving others, we'll sit there and realize, you know, I've been talking for 10 minutes here, about 10 times more than everyone else put together. I need to shut the heck up and listen for a while. And we can, you know, we can change. There's absolutely no way that we're fated to be a certain way. You know, it's just as bad the other way. What about the person who's the big wallflower, who just sits there and says nothing? And, you know, if somebody tries to strike up something, they just have these short answers. That's insensitivity to what's appropriate. They're not keeping up their side of the conversation. It's not enough to say, yeah. You got to say, yeah, and add something to that. Like, yeah, I was doing that, and at first I didn't like it, but I decided it's not that after all. And that's a signal, I want to talk, okay? I'm welcoming conversation. These curt, short answers and stuff signal, please leave me alone. I don't want to talk to you. Basic sensitivity. I need to stop focusing on what I want to say and start giving out, which means real listening to what other people are saying and formulating a response that corresponds, that is suitable. You know, have you ever been, I'm sure we've all been in conversations where you just start talking about something and all of a sudden somebody cuts in with something that has nothing to do with that, but like a word someone said reminded them of this other thing. And so the conversation breaks down, and it's a big nuisance, you know. It's like, dude, that's not what we're talking about. Also, sensitivity means that if we need to share negative feelings toward another, something that we don't like, a lot of times we just stuff that. And you know, when you're trying to make a friend, a casual friend, you're not to that point yet where the relationship is solid enough that it can withstand a bunch of criticism, you know. And so we just basically exercise grace and just ignore annoying things or things that bother us in other people for the time being. Maybe when the relationship deepens, we'll be in a position where we can bring some of that up, but this isn't the time for you. If I do have to bring something up, I do so very carefully and couched in careful terminology that won't be offensive to a relatively fragile relationship. You know, if you just follow these concepts right here with a few people, within a relatively short period of time, a matter of weeks, you could probably make several rewarding casual friendships. It wouldn't be difficult at all. Let's think about a close relationship. Here's kind of, and I realize these categories are imaginary, okay, but I'm just sort of, you gotta conceive of it some way. So, in a close relationship, we're talking about a friendship where you have regular time spent with each other. And this type of relationship, also part of it would include quality time, where we're actually talking about things that matter, like each other's lives, like the things that we care about. Not that we always do that. We still screw around, you know, BS, not that type of stuff, joke. But at some points, we also have some quality conversations. And you know, when you have a quality conversation with someone where you really feel like another person is starting to understand you, that feels like love. That is the beginning point of building a love relationship. When you hang out regularly with somebody, when you are having good talks with them from time to time, you tend to start sharing things in common, interests that you discover you can either that you already had in common, or you even develop new interests, like you take an interest in something that person's interested in, and it becomes interesting to you as well. And the more of these goals, and for those of us in the Christian context, you know, we're often doing this in the context of a home church. And so, you know, we are a goal-driven community. We believe that we're here to accomplish a mission. And we start to share the burden, you know, common friends of ours that are having problems. And we have a goal to see them edified and built up and to help them with that and stuff like that. So, and the fact that we share a common sense of goal with each other, that we're striving together for something, praying together for something, causes a sense of closeness. That's exactly how we start to feel like we're truly friends. This time spent, there's just no way around it. And here's where I think a lot of us are falling down. It's like, oh, brother, so you were hanging out with that new friend of yours and you hung out a few times. How's it going? Oh, you know, I haven't really seen him lately. Really? Because it seemed like that was a very promising relationship there. Yeah. Why aren't you hanging out with him anymore? Oh, you know, schedule things coming up. Okay. Well, dude, schedule things are always going to come up. All right? It's not like we have tons of people just sitting around with nothing to do all the time. The point is, it's not that your schedules just happen to jive. It's you don't find time. You make time. If you want to build relationships, you've got to devote time to it. And as Americans, we don't see it this way. we'll tend to be materialistic. We think, well, all of my job things and all of my school things and all of my hobbies and all of that, they come first. And then if I have any time left, I'll find some time to spend with you. And so relationship ranks near the bottom of what we think life is all about. God is telling us, dude, that needs to be at the top, okay? Then you can fit those other things in. But you make time to hang out with your friends. And if you're not willing to do that, you're just not going to have close friends. That's all there is to it. This quality time. How did we wind up having quality conversations? What makes that happen? I mean, we've all had them before where we felt like, man, I had a great talk with so-and-so the other night. Wonder why? Probably somebody initiated it. And under the biblical mandate, the concept that we're working with here, I need to be the one that's willing to initiate this. It's not going to happen necessarily automatically. Well, that should be obvious. Many people all around us hang out with people all the time, and they never have a conversation like this. Neither person knows how to initiate it. Let's talk about personal inner working. At a close friendship, you know, there's much more freedom to communicate openly and to open up about yourself and to explore into the other person. You could ask pointed personal questions, questions of a very personal nature, and that would not be offensive at this stage. You know, there's a level of commonality because of our common experience. One of the things that common experience does for us is it builds a base of trust, a sense of trust for the other person. And so you're much more willing to explore areas of another person's life. We're at this point beginning to understand one another's problems that we have and also one another's potentials. As you explore another person, as you get to understand another person's personal inner working, you start to realize, you know, this dude is smart, man. I didn't realize how smart he is. Or, you know, and she's got a great sense of humor. And we start to ponder with the Lord. I wonder what God could do with a person like that. I bet there's a major role a person like that could have. And all of this then, these kind of insights, involve thinking about a friend when you're not with them. A lot of us are very reactive. We're not proactive. We just show up and just see what happens. Okay? And that's why we're stumbling and not doing very well at relationship building. We just can't bother ourselves to spend time thinking and praying about this friend of mine. We don't, you know, it's like out of sight, out of mind. And as a result, we tend to show up in a very superficial state of mind. We're shooting from the hip. We're trying to think of something to say, you know, and we just don't, you know, it's going to be crap. The Bible calls on us to consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. And so this considering happens before I'm with the person. It's too late when we're right there already relating. You know, if I wanted to show up as somebody who's ready to give out, ready to engage, I should have spent some time thinking about the person and praying about them. And having the Lord show me, you know, I wonder why he's this way. I don't really understand that part. And so you go back and explore that with the person. Already in a close relationship, we're beginning to be able to promote the strengths that we perceive in another person and to enhance those and to bring ideas for how to maximize that. At the same time that we're coming up with ideas for, you know, if they're really struggling, look, as we get into an honest relationship, one of the things we're going to find out is that we've got problems. All of us are struggling in certain areas. We got some hang-ups, some fears, some deficiencies. Sometimes the other person doesn't even realize it. Like, let's say they've got something going on relationally that's totally uncool and which is driving people away from them. And their perception is, you know, why are people such screw-ups? Why are such people such asses? And they don't even realize that it's what they're doing that is driving people away. So there's a real puzzle there. How can I help my friend start to see that the way you react in these situations is problematic? and here are some ideas for other ways you can... Here's probably why you react that way. And so we can help sensitize them to the nature of problems they may have, and also bring creative ideas for how to make progress there. And a friend a while back, you know, who just had this explosive temper, and in certain situations he would just go berserk and just start cursing and sometimes throwing things at people and stuff like that. Well, you know, people in that social circle were just horrified at these maniac, you know, Tasmanian devil type episodes. And so they would, you could just see them just backpedaling away from this guy. It's just like, dude, he's dangerous, man. And so no one wanted to get close to him because of this fierce temper. From his perspective, it was just like, oh, well, I apologize. You know, it's like he didn't see it as any big deal. And so that's a challenge to sensitizing. Dude, you can undo weeks of investment with one episode like that. That's a lot more serious than you think. That's menacing to people. So to do this, a lot of it starts in our prayer life. A lot of this starts when we're not even together. And, you know, we talk about spending time with the Lord in prayer and in the Word of God and getting with God, like daily, to spend some time with Him. And this is one of the things we do when we're hanging out with the Lord, is we go through, and it says, you know, in Scripture, in Ephesians 6, verse 18, to pray at all times in the Spirit for all the other believers. So one of the things that probably is near the top of our list is just thinking through our friends. There's always puzzling aspects there with each of our friends. Why are they lacking motivation in this area? You know, why do they seem to fear this area? And we put these questions to the Lord, and it's awesome to see the Spirit of God often fill us with insight at times like this. Not always, but often. That does happen. If we can't gain any insight, people who are active friends learn to go and even get some counsel from another, somebody who they know is really wise, and say, you know, my friend's into this. What do you think? Why do you think that happens? What do you think makes someone tick like that? And you'd be surprised. You can get some really good ideas that way. Here is a person, okay, so we're describing in friendship that is based on biblical love. We're describing someone who isn't just kind of flowing along with whatever happens in the friendship, but somebody who is approaching their friend in kind of a purposeful way, looking for ways that I can give out, that I can make a difference. It's a very different concept from what even most people in the world think of when they think of friendship. They don't have this part. Let's talk about the emotional sharing that would be typical in a close relationship. Projecting and expressing feelings like loyalty, like affection, like gratitude. You know, by gratitude, I don't mean thanks for the cigarette. I'm talking about I'm grateful for our friendship. You know, the time we spend with each other is really becoming important to me. I value you. Grateful for the relationship. We think of loyalty. That's basically a way of saying, you know, I'm there for you, right? I'm sticking with you. We are friends. And that's a declaration of loyalty. Affection. You know, a lot of guys are just like, ew, that's gay. It's not. It's basic Christian love. To let somebody know, you know, you matter to me. I like you. And it means a lot to me that you are such a stable, you know, cool person in my life. And, you know, people will just light up when you learn to get outside of your selfish inhibitions and start to give out emotionally. You can just see it just melts people. This is exactly what we all want to feel, is that we do matter to someone else. And so by expressing that, it's a ministry that is a giving out. If we've been investing in our common experience, if we've been exploring one another and understanding each other and helping each other, then when we bust out with some emotional expression of caring, it doesn't seem weird, it doesn't seem freaky or you know, odd like that, because it fits the context of what's going on. So we got to learn how to do this. And I think, frankly, the men tend to be a lot weaker in this area than women in general. Not always, of course. But some of us, pretty uptight, we would find it very difficult to make any kind of affectionate statement toward a friend. And it's all fear. It's fear-based. Self-protection. The biggest reason that we're resistant to it is because we're protecting ourselves from looking stupid. Well, biblical love is risky love, and we're willing to take the risk. And you're not going to sound stupid anyway. Of course, there has to be a sense of appropriateness. There has to be a sense of matching what you say to the stage that the relationship is in. And there are those of us who are the furthest thing from this, and frankly, we're just gushing emotion all the time. And that can get pretty weird in its own right. We might have to start learning to rein it in a little bit and get a little bit more feeling for the situation. Because, you know, when somebody just comes at you, then you just like, just, you know, keep your distance, man. And it's kind of alienating. At the close relationship level, you know, we can be more honest about the disappointments maybe we feel with the other person, but also careful to encourage the person at the same time. The reason that we're honest about the, you know, people are very disappointing. If you get into relationships, you see some negative, the negatives start to become more apparent because in the initial stages, you know, people always keep the best foot forward. They put on a face that they think you want to see. But as you get close to somebody, you start to see the real person. And that picture is often pretty fallen, pretty questionable in a number of areas. And it can be like, that's when you start second-guessing, do I even want to be a friend of someone like this? Well, we know our answer as love givers is that we want to win through here. And one of the things that we may need to do out of love is to think of a way, to develop a strategy for how am I going to bring this questionable feature in this other person to their attention and call for some change and help them change. Encouragement, though, is also very important. Now, a lot of us are way too negative, and we have not discovered the power of encouragement. To be able to notice things that people do that are cool, that took courage, that are insightful, that seem compassionate, and to later come by and say, I saw that, what you did there, and it was awesome. That totally built me up. The thing you said the other night, you know, that was so insightful. You really seem to understand a lot of these things at a pretty deep level. Stuff like that. And it's like a soothing balm that just, you know, people need to be encouraged. You know, discouragement is one of the things that we struggle with. And so friends who give out love know how to do this effectively. Oh man, we could study that one word, encouragement, all night long and still be coming up with new ideas. Of course, encouragement is not flattery. Flattery is when you're really manipulating because you're just saying, you know, positive things about another person. You're blowing smoke up their butt and, you know, trying to kiss up. And people sense it. They sense that it's false. And it's very discrediting. I mean, it basically, you are a BSer at that point, and they sense it. And so it actually breaks down relationship to flatter. We don't need to flatter people. Flattering is false encouragement. We need to do real encouragement. If biblical love is anything, it's real. Okay, that's what we need to shoot for. And so we should wait until we see something that we see, you know, that is cool, that is progress. I remember somebody coming up to me as a young Christian and saying, you know, you just seem to me like you have radically changed in the past 6 months. I can't believe how much more, you know, it seems like you used to be such a raw, you know, selfish, hard ass. And now it just seems like, you know, I can see God working in your life. You really changed and stuff. And you're just sitting there and just like, really? Whoa, I didn't see it. You know, the change in your life is so gradual. A lot of us, we don't see it, but other people see it. And so by sharing that, you know, and I was just like, man, I was so built up by that. I was just like, man, thanking God later that night and thinking about it, and I was thinking back and thinking, you know, I really have changed some. Glory to God, He's transforming my life. So encouraging. We don't realize how revolutionizing that can be in people's lives. A lot of us are sitting in home churches and ministry houses where people are virtually starving emotionally right in the midst of a group of people for the simple reason that none of us have put any creativity into encouraging one another. And so we're choking ourselves out because all we have are snide comments and stupid, you know, cracks and stuff like that. We never bother to, boy, watch and see. When one person, one spiritual man or woman comes into that situation and is actually practicing encouragement, it can transform the whole situation. Powerful. Let's talk about the intimate relationship. Okay, there's such a thing. All right? We're talking about relationship now at the highest level. This is probably the kind of relationship that you would like to have if you ever get married, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you think that your life partner would be pretty close to you, that you would have an intimate relationship? Not sexually intimate, relationally intimate with another person. It ain't easy. This is the kind of relationship many, many walking Christians, in my opinion, watching their lives, and I think I even wrote a little inventory you can do in your own relationships, and they agree, don't have a single relationship that could be characterized this way. Okay, here's the problem. This is relating at the deepest level, and to the extent that we don't have that in our lives, we're going to feel a certain measure of loneliness. Here is where you fully know and are fully known. And it's what we crave. It's what we thirst for. That desire to almost be at one with another person, that close. That's what satisfies. And that's what we need. And if we can't get there, it's going to be frustrating. We're going to feel ongoing frustration and a floating sense of loneliness, even though we're hanging around with people all the time. At this level, you would probably have extensive time commitment. I mean, to have a relationship like this, this is somebody you're hanging around with all the time, very regularly, and you devote significant, you know, chunks of time just to hang out and to relate to each other. Your availability would have very few limits. This is the person, the question is, am I there for you when you need me? The answer is yes in this relationship more than it would be in any of them. You actually get to a point where you have shared worlds. You're both essentially, you know, probably, and it's not just all just the two of you hanging out, but you're also probably doing other things together. In our context, this is probably in the context of a home church, cell group, ministry house, whatever. And you have the same circles of friends now. You are engaged in the same activities together. You're exploring the same questions together. And there's just this sense that we live inside the same world, you and I. Deep understanding. You would monitor missing time. You know, this is the type of relationship where if you hadn't seen each other for a few days, you would notice that. And you'd be like, hey, man, I need to find some time and we need to hang out. It feels awkward, bad to not be hanging out with a friend this close. Part of our shared worlds is that common prayer burden. And for those of us that are believing Christians here, it's really a three-way relationship. You know, it's like an intimate friendship is between you and me and between both of us and God. It's really a three-way relationship. And so one of the things that we like to do at this stage is to pray together, and we're frequently praying for the same people, for the same needs, for the same fears and concerns that we have. And that's all part of the common experience that we're building. As this goes on over a lengthy period of time, let's say you did this for 2 years, and you're in there that close with someone for a couple of years. Now you have this backlog of common experience. All these things that you've lived through together, you know, and that just becomes kind of a fortress around that relationship. You know, it's like, it makes communication even easier. there's this shared memories and stuff like that. That's why drifting from one relationship to another, being diffuse, where you never stick with one friend for very long, is going to be shallow. I mean, there's just no way around it. Whereas when you build in deeply and you build to this level, there's this awesome sense that, you know, just of our history together, and you know, a lot of your conversation is even made up about, remember the time when so-and-so, and, you know, those kind of conversations. And it's bonding. It's sharing love. When you invest over a lengthy period of time like this, it covers a multitude of sins. You may really screw up in the relationship. You may do something that's hurtful, something that you shouldn't have done, and it's not going to matter that much. It's going to be, you know, it's basically, the more important thing is that you've built this common experience together, and it's not going to be easily shaken by something like that. When we think of personal inner working, well, here would be a relationship where communication is totally open. You know, most of us have things that we don't tell anybody. Secrets, things we're ashamed of, things we don't want other people knowing. But with an intimate friend, here's the place where you can finally bust out with that, and it's safe. And that is part of the sense of love in our lives, of loving and being loved, is that I'm not holding back my secret crap. Because our sense, when you're holding back and you've got these secret areas of your life, the sense you get is, if they knew what I was really like, it'd be a different story. You know, the person that this one loves is not actually me, because they don't even know about this other part, and that's alienating. You see what I'm saying? It's necessary to reach a point where we can throw down and stand in front of another person as exactly who I am, all of it, and see that there's still relationship and love there. That is true closeness. At this level too, two friends that are operating at an intimate level have a common commitment to one another to develop each other's character. It's basically like, you know, we're not just there passively as an observer, but we are participants in each other's lives. And in a friendship like this, we've openly talked about my weaknesses, my strengths, your weaknesses, your strengths. And there's an agreement that, you know, we're here to make a difference in each other's lives. So you'll see confrontation with a friend like this, and it should be coming both directions, not just like one person is always the one that criticizes the other person, which is more like a master-slave thing, a leader-follower type relationship. We're talking about a relationship where both of them feel that they can honestly speak truth to one another. In the emotional area, of course, it's going to be similar types of feelings that are expressed, but with even more freedom to express them at this level of relationship. Also, our emotional giving would be constructive and controlled. For instance, a lot of people jump the tracks here and harm potential intimate friendships because they subscribe to kind of the modern view that I have the right to ventilate. You know, and so they will come in at certain points and just, you know, blow out this hostile, you know, nasty, angry episode on somebody. And then afterwards, you're like, well, I was just ventilating. You know, and the theory is that, well, if you have hostile, angry feelings and you hold them inside, you know, it's like your pressure is just going to build up and you're just going to explode, right? Something terrible, something's going to break in there. Dude, that's a balloon you're talking about, okay? That's a pressure cooker, a machine. We are not machines. Anger is not a gas. All right? It's an emotion. And it's an emotion that needs to be under control so that we're not shattering our loved ones with these vile, angry things that we say and do, or the punishing behavior where we're just going to shut them out and punish them for a matter of days. These are relationship destroyers. This is immature, self-centered behavior. You show me a pair of friends, you show me a couple, a married couple, who are hurtling names at each other, cussing each other out, shouting, and that is raw worldly immaturity. Hell no, that's not part of a Christian relationship. How is that loving and constructive to the other person? There should be nothing like that. That should never be happening. And if it does, we should go back quickly and apologize. But even that, even though we say, well, I apologize, you know, that's really not good enough. You can't just shatter somebody and then say, oh, I'm sorry, and think that makes up for it. That's not good enough. We need to learn to get control of the ego. And need to learn to behave in a way that's loving and outgiving instead of just exploding my thing all over someone regardless of the effect that it has. This commitment to share nurturing feelings for the sake of the other person has to be there even when it's not spontaneous, guys, men. We say, well, I would say something nice, but I just don't feel like it. You know, if I get the urge, I'll say it. Well, the problem is a lot of expressions are never going to be spontaneous. You're never going to get that urge. You're condemning your loved one to a life without. If you have that, I used to think that myself. I used to think, well, if you just like made yourself say it, then it would be like phony, right? I mean, that wouldn't even count. And, you know, no, that's not true. Because first of all, the good thing that you're expressing is actually true. I do care about this person. The problem is I don't feel like saying it because I'm all inhibited and hung up in self. That's why. And so when I actually express that I care about you, I'm being more truthful than I am when I just keep my mouth shut and say nothing. There's a model that you can think through. I actually wrote a book on this, which we have out in the study center out here, called Spiritual Relationships That Last. It's a book about friendship, and it's also about dating and marriage, but the whole first third of the book is about friendships. It's this kind of stuff we're talking about here tonight. And it might be a good piece to think through. I got another book called Organic Disciple Making that has a shorter version and a chapter on building friendships in there. Can I please urge us here to actually think about this week trying to do some of the things that we're talking about here? What about it? You know, it's one thing to walk out of a teaching and just be like, oh, that was kind of interesting. Yeah? Well, what about doing something about it? What about actually pushing the envelope a little bit, stepping into uncomfortable ground, and actually trying to bust into some relationship with someone? Wouldn't that be something? I think God will reward you. You'll see very quickly. Let me make a few points about these points of resistance, these difficult transitions that we've talked about. The key to winning through in this is to appropriate the power of God. I could sit here and listen to some of the descriptions that we've had tonight, and not that long ago I would have to sit there and just think, I can't do that. That's just not within me. That would be too unnatural. I couldn't do that. And I would tell myself stuff like that. Yeah, well, good. You can't do it. What about God? Does he have any say in this? Does his power matter at all? What I have to do is ask God to change the way I am. We sit there and we say, yeah, well, I'm just a screamer. I've always been a screamer and a cusser. And that's why I batter my spouse the way I do. You know, I can't help it. Oh, so God can't help it either. Is that what you're saying? Yes, it is what you're saying. Maybe we need to learn to try to appropriate the power of God. We could go to him in prayer. What he wants from us is availability. He doesn't expect us to come through with the ability. He knows that we're broken creatures. He knows that we're damaged people. So he doesn't expect us self to transform self. That's never going to happen. But just like that kid that brought the 5 loaves and 2 fishes to Jesus, and this crowd that needed to be fed, 5,000 strong or more, how ridiculous he must have felt handing that sack lunch to Jesus. And yet, it turned out to be more than enough. Jesus transformed what he was given by that kid, fed everyone there, and there were baskets left over afterwards. Oh, hell yes, he can do it. And the question is not, and it wasn't that the boy had the ability to do that, but what he had, it was the availability. It's that he took his miserable little whatever and he put it in the hands of Christ. That's what we have to do with our relational deficiencies. Put them in the hands of God and start to trust. So availability and persistent prayer about the areas where I know I'm not coming through. I'm just living for my neediness. I'm just trying to get feelings from people. I'm really not a love giver. Pray to God about that honestly and persistently. As we try to become love givers, we should also work on ourselves. Yes, we work on the relationship, but we also need to work on ourselves. You know, one of the reasons that I need to deal with some of my offensive habits, some of my negative, sinful habits in my life, is the impact that that's having on others. You know, a guy will spend several hours leering at porno and then shows up to hang out with people. It's frankly, it's not that easy to relate to people in that state of mind. You know what I mean? One of the reasons I need to lose this, we say, well, it's not hurting anyone. It is. It's hurting the people that you're supposed to be loving and you're not able to. This is one of the key reasons that I've gotten rid of one habit after another in my life, is because of the negative impact it's having in my relationships. And so one of the loving things we can do for others is to realize my habit, my overeating, my drinking, these other things that may be harming my life, I need to lose these, not for me, but for the sake of others, that I want to be in a position to be a giver. We shouldn't be confined to working on only one level. Like someone might be sitting here and saying, well, I've got a couple of really intimate friends. We fit that description to a T. Yeah? How are you doing with casual friends? You know, Jesus said, what credit is it if you only love them that love you? Intimate friendships are good, but we're also supposed to be able to make new friends and reach out to people and be outward. Or is it that all my friends are casual and I don't know how to get past that level, but I just like having casual, superficial friends? Dude, you're robbing yourself, you're robbing others. Learn how to build at all of these levels. Of course, you're going to have way more casual friends than you do intimate friends, just because of the time investment. That's as it should be. And for God's sake, if you're struggling, get some help from other people. There are people that are wise, experienced, who have learned pretty deeply the things of God. People right here who have gone through the same struggles that you're going through. They could in part help you. There are people in your home church who could help you with the areas you're struggling with. If you're confused, I would try to go get some counsel from a fellow believer who I respected as a mature Christian. And you will be surprised. I mean, it is helpful. Don't believe the lie in your head that, oh, well, no one's going to be able to say anything because, you know, I'm the way I am. Don't believe that. Go see. Go ask. And I think you'll be pleased. I think you'll find that what you get back is actually pretty cool and has quite an impact. People who learn to build deep, lasting relationships can repeat it over and over. Once you get there a couple times, it's easy to get back there. You know, this is a learned ability. And this is what will fill your life with, a sense of well-being, spirituality, happiness, as you sense God using you in the lives of the people you love. This is what we were designed to be. We've got to take this seriously and start building from wherever I'm at now the next step out. And I pray that we'll really consider doing something about that.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.